Hello and welcome to Truth News Radio Australia. Tonight, we ask the question, does Australia need a Bill of Rights? We have with us two experts in this field, one of them being Josh Jackson on my left, and one of them being Dan Collins on my right. Dan brings to the discussion extensive knowledge of many aspects of history. Josh, an expert in media, and myself, I'm here to discuss, to explore, and to ask the tough questions. Dan.
The United States has a Bill of Rights. Australia does not. As you might remember, Senator Gareth Evans, in the previous Labor administration, attempted to pass a Act of Parliament to establish such a bill, which was foiled by the, I think, the Democrats and the Liberal Party in the Senate, from memory.
The big issue here is a lot of people feel that having a Bill of Rights is basically another level of bureaucracy and basically giving the lawyers a whole lot more money, because the only people that benefit from a Bill of Rights are the lawyers. I mean, this is what has been told and said, because what happens is it's just another layer to fight past, so that when you want to find out about, you know, you want to sue someone or you think your rights have been crossed, then you can go in, and there's laws against certain issues, and you can fight on that. Whereas the Bill of Rights is such a sweeping thing. The other concept that has been passed on the against side of the Bill of Rights is the fact that every country that has a Bill of Rights, even China, has a Bill of Rights, and no one ever really takes any notice of it. I mean, America has a Bill of Rights, and one of the rights is no grievous punishment or something like that. No extreme grievous punishment.
I think the term is cruel and unusual punishment.
So what a lot of against people are saying is that it's going to cost more for lawyers, for the ordinary man to fight in court, and the lawyers will have a field day, because everything could be then going through two different levels of law. Saying that, I feel that should happen at the moment anyway, because we are a signatory to the international human rights. What is it, the IPRC or something?
Well, we are a signatory to the International Convention against Torture. I think there's a number of them, like the International Convention for Human Rights. We as a country are meant to uphold the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and there are certain other things that are such as policy towards refugees, which are represented in UN declarations.
I mean, Dan, do you have anything to say about that?
Well, I guess it's idiosyncratic in a way. It could eventually become idiosyncratic, but the United States has a Bill of Rights, and Australia does not, and it reflects a philosophical approach, which in both differing constitutions, where the United States Constitution was in itself almost a Bill of Rights. You know, in all these different articles, you know, like the right of the people to freedom of assembly and freedom of conscience and religion shall not be infringed. You know, the right of the people to bear arms, you know, shall not be infringed. The United States Constitution was written at a time when, and a place, you know, in a psychological space where, you know, it was very important to enshrine rights in the Constitution. Now, the Australian Constitution is very much a workaday document, which, you know, goes about defining the separation of powers and the rights and duties of the states versus the Commonwealth. And basically, the Australian Constitution is almost like a documenting the process. You know, it regulates the whole process of parliamentary democracy. But
I mean, a lot of people, what they're basically saying is that we've got laws for this stuff. So, you know, what the Attorney General, I went and saw the Attorney General speaking about this today at the New South Wales Parliament, and basically he was saying, well, you know, the ACT has got a Bill of Rights, and one of them is the citizens have the right to move freely around the ACT, and he was saying that's obvious. But during APEC, we weren't free to move around in New South Wales, so that bill would have come in quite handy, because I was quite offended at the fact that my city that I'm paying my taxes for, I couldn't roam around freely. I had to be searched and felt like I was some sort of criminal. So in that state, and he was saying, "Yo, why would you? Of course you can move around freely, but it only takes one situation where that bill is then infringed upon, and that then opens a whole legal can of worms." But stating that, even if countries do have bills of rights, and this is where his argument came, is that even when bills of rights are prevalent, that they just get ignored. So the government just says, right, we have a police state. Sorry, bills of rights. I mean, when Katrina happened, all the guns got taken away. The American Second Amendment got totally wiped out in New Orleans. People were getting their guns confiscated.
I'd just like to make the point that when we're talking about human rights and we're talking about a legal framework, I think it tends to be forgotten that there is a fundamental principle at work, and that what we are trying to do is uphold the principle. But what tends to happen when these discussions turn to the wording of a document is that it becomes a legalistic discussion about the meanings of words, about the specific interpretation of individual, parts of that. And this is one of the dangers of actually putting stuff into a legalistic framework, because you forget and you lose the principle that you're actually fighting for. And I think that my focus is more about the principle. And if a declaration comes along, all well and good. But if a declaration comes along that I think has been misapplied or is possibly badly worded, then I'm just going to move on. I'm not going to focus everything and make everything dependent on having this declaration, because the fact is of human nature that it's likely that there will be problems with it, and there'll be misinterpretations of it, and we'll be endlessly debating, as they are in the US, about whether certain things are legal or illegal. And
currently, I think that's a good thing. I mean, if you look at
the debate is good, but unfortunately, there's no clear, it's not as if the debate can be resolved by pointing to the Constitution. The Constitution has been overridden, and it hasn't prevented the abuses of power.
Yeah, so I agree, and if you look at the abolition of posse comitatus and other things, people getting tortured, rendition, all that sort of stuff, and so the Bill of Rights in America has truly gone. I mean, there's freedom of speech is pretty much gone. In certain areas, like there's freedom of speech zones now, so it's kind of ridiculous to say, well, we've got a Bill of Rights. But what I feel that the Bill of Rights is that it's the Attorney General was saying, we've got laws, and if we want to pass laws for certain things in a free and democratic society, we can pass laws. We don't need a Bill of Rights on top of that. But every time you pass laws are things that you can't do. Laws are things like, you can't do this, you can't do that. And every time you pass another law, it's another brick, another way of control, another brick in the wall around you. Whereas Bill of Rights are things that you can do, that are your right to do. So you have the right to do this. Whereas every law is, you can't do this, you can't do that, eventually steering you into the way of what you can do. And I feel that having a Bill of Rights is like having doorways that can't get bricked up. So you've always got a clear path through there. So every law that is another brick of slowly confining your freedoms, having a Bill of Rights lets you have these doorways of saying, hey, well, look, I've got the freedom to move around the city. So the more privatization of roads and RFID chipping of my car and registration, hang on a minute, I've got the freedom to move around here just because I'm not rich enough to afford a car or afford to go on your private roads. I've got the right to move around the city. So I think things like a Bill of Rights is a good idea, but on the other hand, it does force a whole lot more into lawyers getting a lot more money from fighting legal battles.
Can I just ask what your opinion would be, and I'd like to throw this question over to Dan as well. In the event that that we do have a Bill of Rights, and in the event that there are provisions which groups want to have placed within that Bill of Rights, that we find actually, in fact, do the opposite of what we intended. For example, a Bill of Rights may enshrine your freedom of speech, but a Bill of Rights may also have clauses in it which are geared towards restricting what they call hate speech or racial vilification, because it may be deemed by some that it is a right that we all share not to be vilified.
Well, that's where the can of worms opens up, because the Attorney General is basically saying that Bills of Rights are so blanket statements of you have the right, then you get other statements within the infinite detail of law that basically stops the Bill of Rights from working. So you have something that's counteracts the Bill of Rights, and then you just get a can work. Then you're basically paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to lawyers to fiddle through all this stuff.
Well, can I just make the point that the Australian legal system is obviously descended from the British legal system, and Britain doesn't have a Bill of Rights. I mean, you can talk about the Magna Carta, which is the rights of wealthy landowners. But the problem with things like rights of way across a farmer's land and a myriad of things that are currently addressed in the British system under the area of common law. The problem is, you see, in Britain, people have rights. Like, people have rights, traditional rights to cross a farmer's land, since they've been doing it for generations, and they've got, all kinds of these kinds of rights, which are enshrined in all kinds of obscure little pieces of legislation going back hundreds of years. Now,
yeah, like you're allowed to shoot a Scotsman from your land with a bow and arrow only, and stuff like that. You get really absurd laws that just haven't been removed.
Exactly. And this, my point is, the problem I see it with the British legal sort of legacy, the system of the legacy of the British legal system is there's no clear, explicit definition of rights. You see, there's thousands of rights, in the Australian common law system and the British common law system, but they're deeply hidden in I used to work in the New South Wales Parliament, and the amount of legislation, in some of these storerooms, it reaches right up to the roof, and goes back miles. I mean, there's piles of paper. The thing is, simply put, a Bill of Rights has to make explicit, simply, clearly, what a citizen's rights are, inviolable rights. And you see, I mean, this takes it out of the hands of the lawyers. It takes it out of the hands of the experts.
I agree, but at the same time, it puts it in. See, it puts it in out of the hands of the lawyer, because it's easier for the layman to understand you have the freedom of speech to say whatever you can. But then you have laws that nullify those concepts in a micromanaged scale than these broad sweeping statements of you can say anything.
Well, I mean, the thing about The thing about the fairly, I mean, the British system, the British legal system has a fairly repressive heritage. It has a fairly repressive heritage. I mean, there's thousands of little bits of statute statute law here and there. But
for instance, that they can say, right, you have the freedom of speech to say anything as long as it doesn't offend. Right, because that would take into consideration hate speech. But then you can say, well, I start talking about blue suede shoes. But then you get some guy that's a little bit mental saying, I hate blue suede shoes. That's really offensive. That's against my religion. And then all of a sudden you can't talk about blue suede shoes because it's offensive to one person. Or a group of people, even though it's ridiculous. So then it goes to court. Then lawyers are paid to deliberate over blue suede shoes being offensive. And this is no joke. This is what happens.
I think the example of blue suede shoes in a way distracts from the real problem, although I take the point. But I think that what actually happens in reality is that you have pressure groups. And as we all know, there are very, very strong and powerful pressure groups within our society, and one of them is the Israel lobby. Now, they have been very, very vocal in censoring anyone who criticizes the policies of Israel or who might perhaps question the right of the state of Israel to exist. Now, you could argue, if you perhaps were, you know, a very strong pro-Israel person, you could argue that we should not be allowed to question the right of the state of Israel to exist. And yet, you might also argue that we should be entitled to ask that question. And I think, you know, this is a perfect example of how something that might seem totally reasonable to some people to say, well, you must never question the right of Israel to exist because that would be to threaten the state of Israel by your polemic, your propaganda could encourage people to attack Israel. And of course, this feeds into the well-known issues regarding questioning the Holocaust, which have actually led to laws being passed in Europe, which basically, if you do question the Holocaust, you can be put in prison. Now, where does this fit into a Declaration of Human Rights? Because many would say, and many argue, that we need to be free to be able to ask questions, whether it's questioning what really happened in the Holocaust, whether it's questioning the right of Israel to exist, yeah, or whether it's questioning the right of Australia to exist, and possibly claiming that we don't actually, as a white Anglo-Saxon society, have any right to be here.
Yeah. And I agree, Harold, is that it goes all the way from, I mean, my example of blue suede shoes is very, it's the ridiculous end. And then you get to full on ends of, hey, well, I'm questioning the Holocaust or I'm not. I mean, I for one think is that it was absolutely ridiculous to question the Holocaust. But I do believe in the people's right to question.
Anyway. Well, can I just make the point that, I don't know how you would put hate speech into a Bill of Rights. I mean, you could put, you know, say something like, well, people have the right to not have hate speech said about them, but that's a bit ridiculous.
That's what I was saying before. A Bill of Rights is more about things that you can do, whereas little laws are about stuff you can't do. So I think, you know, that's...
Well, the thing about the right of Israel to exist, I mean, there's a UN resolution, I think, which back in the 40s or the 50s, which started that ball rolling.
But that's just one issue. I mean, the concept of the Bill of Rights, and I'd like to stay on that concept. But I feel that it would be great to get some comments back from the show listeners to see if they feel the Bill of Rights is needed in Australia, whether they're for and against.
Please phone in on our toll-free number. Actually, we don't have one yet.
No, we don't have one yet. But you can definitely visit the truthnews.com.au website and leave a comment. State why you're for and against. and you know, talk more on the forum.
Should we break for a musical interlude at this point?
Absolutely. Here we go.
Far between sundown's finish and midnight's broken toll, we ducked inside the doorways, thunder went crashing. As majestic bells of bolts struck shadows in the sounds, seeming to be the chimes of freedom flashing. Flashing for the warriors whose strength is not to fight. Flashing for the refugees on the unarmed road of flight. And for each and every underdog soldier in the night. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing. Through the city's melted furnace, unexpectedly we watched, with faces hidden as the walls were tightening. As the echo of the wedding bells before the blowing rain dissolved into the bells of the lightning. Tolling for the rebel, tolling for the rake, tolling for the luckless, they are abandoned and forsaken. Tolling for the outcast, burning constantly at stake. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing. Through the mad, mystic hammering of the wild, ripping hail, the sky cracked its palms in naked wonder as the clinging of the church bells blew far into the breeze, leaving only bells of lightning and its thunder. Striking for the gentle, striking for the kind, striking for the guardians and protectors of the mind. And the poet and the painter far behind his rightful time. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing.
Hello and welcome back to the show. And thank you to young Bobby Dylan, your contribution. We're all indebted to you.
Yeah, good on you, Bob.
Now, I'd like to move on from our previous discussion, but I'd like to keep it related. And what I'd like to move towards is a discussion of another aspect of our freedoms, which may actually provide some difficulties in terms of the drafting of a Bill of Rights, because this is the whole issue of surveillance and biometric scanning. And because this is an issue where we really need to look at the question of, do we have a right not to have our privacy intruded upon? And this may be a difficult thing to try and put into a legal framework, because being surveilled may not be seen by some as something that we should be concerned about, and it certainly is something that we need to object to if we want to have it removed. So rather than being merely a positive thing that we ask for, such as the freedom to assemble and, you know, the freedom to express our opinion, we find it objectionable that the government intrudes into our privacy in various ways. And there's two particular examples that I'd like to discuss tonight. One being the recent plan by Qantas to introduce a new type of X-ray scanning, which actually allows the security personnel to see the contours of the nude body of a person who is walking through security.
Absolutely terrifying.
Indeed. And the second is the fingerprinting and finger scanning of children at school, which has currently been adopted by at least one school in the Sydney area. So I'm going to just open up this subject for discussion and we'll see where it leads. I'll hand it over to Josh initially.
Look, Harold, I find it highly offensive that we should be treating our children as criminals and fingerprinting them. And I did ring up the principal of the school that was doing this, and I gave her a bit of a history lesson on tyranny. Because basically she was saying, look, it takes us all day to go through our roll call, and it's basically so we know who's here and who's not, because it's our responsibility. And I said, yeah, well, what's wrong with the good old days of saying, Billy, here? You know, there's nothing wrong with it. But she said, well, yeah, there is, because we have to then fill it out, and it takes ages to correlate, and sometimes we make mistakes. I said, it's ridiculous. So the road to tyranny is based on good intention. It's based on it. And so I don't doubt that your intentions were good, but to condition our children to giving biometric scans of any sort is absolutely absurd.
Sure. But can I just point out that like breath testing drivers is a form of biometrics?
Well, not to an extent, because it's absolutely impermanent. It's not being stored. It's a measurement of a blood alcohol level at that time and that point, and it's not recorded to any name.
But there is. I mean, if you are like a patient in a public hospital, I mean, they're going to do all kinds of blood tests, and they're going to do, you know, and like even like if you get blood tests at your local GP, I mean, you're going to go through, say, Douglas Handley Meyer or.
I think there are parallels with the body scanning system that Qantas is bringing in that remind me a little bit of what you just said, rather than the finger scanning, which is actually partly to do with data mining.
Yeah, I certainly agree with your the general premise that, I mean, one has a right to you know, one's own information about one's own, you know, biochemical state, you know, and one is entitled to privacy. But I mean, it's an objective fact. I mean, you know, like,
well, these parents weren't even told that their children were. There was a vague statement somewhere in some newsletter, but they weren't even told that their children were being finger scanned.
Can I ask you, Josh? Do you think that we have a right, and would this be something you'd want to enshrine in some sort of legalistic form, that we have a right not to be scanned biometrically?
Absolutely. I think it's a very, very important right, because in the very near future, well, in fact now, right now, they've got motion detection and where they biometrically scan the way you walk, so, and that detects you. In England, they can track you from any, they can type into a computer, Josh Tchaikovsky, give him a picture, or Joshua Jackson, and basically, you walk through, you'll have that face, and you can say, where was he today? And the computer will go, blah, 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 data miner. Okay, he walked from Paul Mall over to this station, and then he walked through here.
Well, I mean,
you
that's,
can track someone.
That's sure, absurd. But that's still in the, I believe that's still in the realm of science fiction.
No, it's not. Right now, you can do that. The London police do it.
Sure, they try to. I mean, they try to, but it takes so much computing power, like, practically speaking. I mean, you have to know. My point is,
The fact, though, Dan, is that whether the technology is there or not, the will by the agencies that we live under and we employ are really wanting this technology as fast as they can. And they're willing to have false flag terrorist attacks to justify these sorts of technologies to be put into place as fast as possible to track and trace you. And they'll keep going unless we say in some sort of international or national or local rights bill or laws stating that we oppose to be tracked and the data to be kept.
So I understand the principle of what you're saying, but I'm merely trying to bring up the point that it's easier said than done. I've had like say 2-3 operations in the public health system. I've had a myriad of blood tests. I've had like broken bones, X-rays. You know, there's my medical records are sitting somewhere in the New South Wales Health Department. You know, and they've without a doubt they've scanned it all. You know, using an optical scanning. You know, as like everybody, the libraries have done that. You know, everyone's scanned all their data onto, you know, going back years on, you know, just mainly just for something to do. But the fact is, practically speaking, there's a whole fountain, if you're interested, of, you know, of biomedical data on me.
Not only that, all your whole internet history and yada, yada, yada. Yes, I agree. And we are living in a world where constantly more and more of your privacy is by default just vaporized because you don't have a choice because the technology is in a way so intrusive that you don't have a choice in where you go and where your biometrics sit. But German hackers have just recently put out onto the internet this thumb scan of a prevalent politician in Germany to state the fact that, hey, once you start this biometric stuff, we can steal it and we can put it anywhere we want. In fact, they've promoted other hackers to take that fingerprint, make molds of it, and start using the fingerprint scanners on their computers and stuff and using that as their key to get into things. Because to purely state the fact that this isn't secure.
Okay, I'd just like to point out from my point of view that I think that the concerns that we have about being surveilled are actually the concern about a top-down authoritarian use of technology that allows a controlling group who, you know, is a minority to have power over the majority. And I think that if we look at the problem in this way, what we realize is that the problem is not with surveillance in itself. The problem is not with the technology in itself. The problem is in its restriction to a one-way process whereby the powers that be record, track, trace, and, you know, put our information into databases. If we could all do the same to the powers that be, in other words, if everything they did could be tracked and traced and was openly accessible by the people, I don't think I'd have so much of a problem with it.
Yeah, see, I tend to agree, but I still think the civilians shouldn't be the ones that have the still tracked and traced. I just don't think. I think absolutely that the people in charge and power should be totally accountable for all their actions.
Imagine if every politician in his office had a continuous recording of everything that he says, which was freely accessible by freedom of information, just like Parliament is. So that because these people, we invest them in such responsibility, we also expect them to be accountable for everything that they say and do.
Yes, but every bit of information can be used in different ways. As we can see with the media, you can take a conversation and splice it to make it sound whatever you want. So if all of a sudden the politician's on record saying, da, 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 I want to kill people, when it was a joke and it was in some strange context that was, you know, part of a movie that he was talking about or something, and then it gets out there and I just think living in a society where you constantly feel like you're being watched and you have to watch everything you say and where you go and where you walk and what you do and... I just think it's a revolting scenario.
Well, Herod, it makes a good point that, I mean, the politicians should be the first people. I mean, if you're going to have this kind of draconian system, the politicians should be under the thumb just as much as anyone else, which is, you know...
But how high do you go? Do you go up to the bankers?
Never going to happen. It's never going to happen. I mean, obviously, because, you know, society's run for the plutocracy and, you know... well, again, it comes back to, you know... Well, the difficulty with this in any kind of Bill of Rights is ultimately a question of definition. I mean, you know, I mean, remember that thing recently in the news about how, you know, some presidential, you know, hopefuls have had their passport data looked into by some hacker, and suddenly it was worldwide news, and, you know, and it was just something utterly innocuous, like somebody's, you know, the information they put on a passport application, which is...
I suspect that that story is a cover for something much more sinister, and I'm personally very sceptical of the way that story has been covered, because I don't think that merely someone peering into a record on a computer in a kind of mischievous way would have made it as a worldwide story in the way this did. I think there is something else going on behind the scenes there. It's very typical of the way stories are massaged and manipulated in the media so that we don't really know, we don't have a very clear idea what actually happened.
Harold, could you give the listeners the headline or something around what the headline was so people can look that story up, or Dan?
The particular story to which Dan was referring, something like this, you know, State Department caught or employee of the State Department was caught looking at the passport details of Senator Obama, and there was kind of some inquiry over it, and it has now become something that the government is looking into, and it was certainly the incumbent government which was looking in at information relating to Obama, who is a presidential candidate. So there are political implications there. There are more implications than merely looking at a passport, because looking at a passport, it doesn't give you anything. I mean, it's just the information that we already know. So I suspect that there must be more to it than that, because a passport just has some stamps in it of where you've been. Well, you know, could there be some confidential information of where Obama has been? I don't know. That's like about all it could be.
Topic for another day. But going back to the Qantas scanning devices, this is another way of psychologically getting people ready for mass control and humiliation. It's a form of humiliation.
Can we just discuss the ethics of that? Because, I mean, for example, if they wanted to be able to look up the skirts of women, that would be immediately derided as some form of, you know, immoral, unethical activity. And yet, what they are actually able to do with this technology is much more explicit than that. This is actually being able to effectively, virtually remove the clothing from a person to see what they look like without clothes on. Now, in the course of doing that, they may also be able to see if you've got something that you're carrying strapped to your chest or whatever. But as well as that, they get to basically invade your personal space in a way that normally we would find completely objectionable.
Look, the thing is, you know, it is a psychological op, because at the end of the day, the chances of terrorism are so minuscule and so ridiculously small. And why would they just want a plane? Why couldn't a terrorist just blow themselves up in a marketplace? I mean, that's where terrorists blow themselves up, or on a bus, or on anywhere. Why just on planes? I think it's absolutely absurd. It's disgusting. And I think the Australians should be outraged.
Well, I mean, at the risk of digressing from our topic, I just possibly say that one of the hallmarks of fascist governments has always been tendency to restrict two things. One is freedom of assembly, and the other is freedom of travel. And you could argue, I think, that a lot of the restrictions that we've seen on travel have the potential of being used in a fascistic way. So rather than seeing it as a kind of generalized invasion of our privacy, what we could actually see it as a precursor to an increasing restriction of our freedom to travel. And in previous societies, there have been such restrictions that if you don't have papers or you aren't authorized, you may not even be able to travel from one city to the next.
Well, you go to prison.
Yeah, I mean, once they bring in a system that says you need to be authorised to say to go from Sydney to Canberra, for example, if you travel from Sydney to Canberra and you're not authorised, you could go to prison. So, this again brings us back to questions of our freedoms. And I think that when we look at issues like surveillance or biometric scanning, we need to actually understand what the underlying purpose of some of these technologies and plans, like the way the technology is used, are.
Well, we can see that travel is really a guise to collect DNA and biometric data in a worldwide database. I mean, pretty much everyone I know in the Western world has traveled overseas. You know, there's very, very few people that have. And pretty much every country is making you take vaccinations and biometrically scan you whether you're leaving or entering another country. So at the end of the day, eventually, they would have biometrically scanned everyone through the guise of terrorism using travel.
Well, I mean, a Bill of Rights might actually come in helpful in that, in this whole scenario. It just to merely, if you stated that someone's biometrically obtained data by the government should not be shared with anybody, this would give a
or belongs to the person that is scanned.
Well, that's difficult. But I'm just saying, if you tied the government's hand to a certain degree, saying, you know, you may not share this with anybody. I mean, obviously, it's in practice, it's hard to enforce, but in principle, I mean, it's like a doctor, who repeats the Hippocratic Oath. I mean, you know, I can't remember whether it actually involves a part about confidentiality, but you see, if you go to your doctor, for example, you expect confidentiality. In practice, I mean, obviously, the doctor's secretary can look up all your records and gossip to her next door neighbor about it. You see what I'm saying? In practice, it's hard to enforce, but the idea of professional ethics, you know, the doctor has a professional.
Yeah, but if stuff gets out, then you can sue the practice.
That's my point. I mean, if you state in law that biometric data, you know, is private, then this would put a strong burden on the government for keeping it, you know, encrypted.
Can I just have an example of that? DNA profiling, which has been around for a long time. I mean, DNA, your DNA fingerprint is information which can be collected from you, and it can actually be collected from you inadvertently, although I think it's harder for them to do it. But it can also be demanded of people, and it has been. There have been cases where they're trying to track down a rapist, and you know, everyone in a particular town has actually been required to go to the police and have a DNA swab.
And if you're not, you're a suspect.
Yeah, well, of course, refusing to do so makes you look like you're guilty. Now the question here is, I mean. Sure, your DNA information is private. I mean, no one's really interested in looking at it. It's not going to be very interesting. It's just going to be like a whole bunch of numbers or something. Now, so it's not really so much a question of keeping that information private or even talking about whether it's shared or not, because it's of no use to 99.9% of the population. Its only use is in the context of identifying a person who might be a suspect in an investigation.
Yeah, but later on it can also be used to track and trace. And it can also be used by insurance companies to say that you're uninsurable because we've seen in a past blood scan or breath test or that you've actually got a certain sort of ailment that which we know about now, so we won't insure you. I mean, that's a nightmare scenario. But who says that couldn't happen?
Well, I mean, in order for them to be able to identify you as Josh Jackson through your DNA, they need to have a DNA database. And when I say they, I mean the police, right? But if the database exists and the police have it, then the next step is that database, once it exists, can be passed on to some other organization and other people can have access to it. And so once you've established that a database can be created, you then have the more difficult argument of saying, well, we want this database kept private, but it's already no longer private because the entire, you know, government has access to it. And so once the government has access to it, they may deem as part of their necessary due process that certain other bodies need to have access to it as well. And so it's a slippery slope, and it's very hard to see how we can actually put any kind of checks and balances once we've accepted that they have the right to gather this information. So this is just getting back to this question of, do we actually need somehow to form a framework within our legal system where we say that this is not something that we're going to condone?
Absolutely. And I absolutely agree with you. What I also think, though, is that people need to be educated on the fact that history has shown time and time again that tyranny is, it's an internal, it's a constant battle of freedom versus tyranny. And governments have time and time and time and time again tried to take more and more power. And eventually, I mean, if the governments of the past had the sort of tracking and DNA and the biometric systems that are in place today, we would be absolutely screwed. Absolutely. No doubt about it.
If you look at when DNA testing came out, in the 80s, 90s, and they started, you know, looking back. I mean, you must have heard of the work of the Innocence Project, which is one of a number of groups, you know, trying to get, you know, Americans off death row. And when the Innocence Project started, you know, comparing DNA, you know, stored DNA, and, you know, and with the DNA of the people who've been in prison for 10, 20 years, like back in the, back in the 90s, they were letting about, you know, they were letting hundreds of black people off death row. I mean, it was a joke, you know, like, you know, they, the number of people, you know, in the US, you know, over a space of 10 years who were, you know, released from prison because it turns out they'd been, you know, beaten into signing false confessions and all number of horrors. I mean, you know, and it was simply the DNA evidence.
This becomes an argument in favour of DNA profiling, and it has been used. I've heard it, and it actually is used by proponents of DNA to say, look, it's a good thing. This helps us, you know, get innocent people out of prison.
Well, my point, I'm just simply saying, is what scares me is the fact that they might use DNA to actually implicate an innocent person. They might find a way to...
Well, I mean, we're totally at the mercy. I mean, we have to trust that they're always going to use this with integrity because we're not scientists. We can't verify their results.
No, you can't verify the results. But how easy is when someone says there was DNA evidence, case closed in most people's minds. But what stops someone just splattering a bit of someone else's blood in or leaving a hair behind or take, you know,
leaving? Well, that's one of the scariest possibilities is that evidence can be introduced into a crime scene this way.
And so small deliberately. Evidence, one little hair on a crime scene is all of a sudden you're guilty. And in everyone's mind, if you state the fact that, oh, DNA evidence has found, you're guilty. But it's a little bit off topic. And
well, I think it comes back to our theme for tonight, which was the question of rights, the question of a Bill of Rights. And I guess what I'm trying to introduce into this discussion is, do we need something in our Bill of Rights that actually not only, promotes or guarantees freedoms, but that in some way says, well, this is something that we don't want to allow. And but once we open the gate to basically talking about things that we don't want to allow, we have other problems because we've already discussed in the previous segment, we discussed the problem about preventing, for example, hate speech and how that might be manipulated. And we were saying that, well, we don't want to focus on provisions that will prevent things from occurring. We want to focus on provisions that will allow freedoms. But this seems to be one case where we seem to have a case for saying, well, this is something, the sort of thing we don't want to happen. How do we frame that into a Bill of Rights?
Very good question. And we'd like to hear from our listeners as well. It's very important to us that you get through. What we will set up is a Skype line eventually and a dedicated time to ring. We can even leave a leave a message with Skype, which will air, but we'll get that set up in the next few weeks. In the meanwhile, I hope you've enjoyed the show. I'm Joshua Jackson.
I'm Harrowood Fenton.
I'm Dan Collins.
And you're listening to truthnews.com.au podcast. Goodbye.
Even though a cloud's white curtain in a far-off corner flared, and the hypnotic splattered mist was slowly lifting, electric light still struck like arrows fired but far the ones condemned to drift or else be kept from drifting. Calling for the searching ones on a speechless seeking trail, for the lonesome hearted lovers with too personal a tale, and for each unharmful gentle soul misplaced inside a jail. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing. Starry-eyed and laughing as I recall when we were caught, trapped by no track of ours, for they hang suspended. As we listened one last time and we watched with one last look, spellbound and swallowed till the tolling ended. Tolling for the aching whose wounds cannot be nursed, or the countless confused accused misused strung out ones and worse, and for every hung up person in the whole wide universe. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing.